This is Michael Dolan, host of Wednesday Evening Classics, and I have the honor today of talking with Orly Shaham. She has a new CD out, Brahms Inspired. It's a two-CD set on Canary Classics, CC15. Welcome to the show, Orly.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I just want to, before we get into the new CD, which obviously is pretty interesting, I want to go a little bit of your background. What do you want to tell us about yourself?
I'm what I call a pianist American. I started playing, I guess, when I was about 5 years old, and people ask me how long I've been playing, and I tell them I stopped counting at 30 years, but I won't go any further, give you any further detail than that. this new project has just been kind of consuming me for the last couple of years. It's an enormous undertaking. It's, as you said, a two-CD set of works by Brahms.
It's called Brahms Inspired, and it's not only Brahms, but who Brahms was inspired by and who's been inspired by Brahms. And how did you pick that? How did you come up with that?
You know, I've always been fascinated by, fascinated by great composers. And
right.
What drives them to write the things that they write. And in the case of Brahms, there's kind of been this longstanding discussion of whether he was forward-looking or backward-looking in his composition, whether he was primarily a historicist who studied the great masters of the past and lived in the world of the past, or if he was a progressive who looked to the future and opened doors for the next generation. And I've always thought he was both in so many ways. So when I decided to tackle these late piano works, which are really some of the most inspired in his repertoire, if you'll allow me,
sure.
I thought the one way to approach their placement in history is to look at the works that inspired him in his own writing, and also the works that have been inspired by him, both directly and indirectly.
Okay, that explains some of that. Obviously, Schumann inspired him. I mean, that's an obvious thing. But how did you pick the people who did inspire him? Obviously, he listened to and knew music. But what about these pieces? How did you select the pieces for the CD?
It was a long process to get the program right for this this album. And I've also been taking this program around as a recital program, where it's a little bit shorter, just because of how long a recital usually is and how long two discs are. and so I take different parts of it each time that I play it in recital. And on some level, choosing the pieces that inspired Brahms, I felt a little bit like a kid in a candy store. I mean,
that's what I requested.
Great repertoire to choose from. So I had a couple of particular desires in the pieces that I chose, but honestly, the program could look very different and still make much the same point. So one thing I did was, for example, Brahms's Opus 118, which is the middle of the late Brahms sets that I have on this recording, is in six movements. And it's very unusual to have a six-movement work that is meant to be played together. And although people frequently play only certain selections from it, I've always felt that Brahms intended it as a six-movement work to be played as a whole. And I think he got that inspiration for the whole idea of the six-movement suite from the six-movement Baroque suite. It was very common in the Baroque, which was a time period that Brahms studied deeply, both the music of Couperin and the music of Bach and others of that time. He spent hours and hours on meticulously studying their notes. They frequently held together six-movement works. It was sort of the way to do a larger-scale solo work at that time. So I feel he had a direct link when he was putting together his six movements, and even though it was through the lens of about 200 years later, 170 years later, he still took a lot of that sort of emotional trajectory, the emotional arc of how it feels to be in a six-movement suite in his Opus 118. So one of the pieces I've chosen to put on is a six-movement suite by Bach.
Right. That was the earliest piece I noticed. I was going to bring that up. I was hoping there were six movements for that.
Yes, absolutely. And the other connection, I could have chosen something by Couperin. Brahms loved his music and actually edited a great deal of it and spent a lot of time bringing it to everybody's attention of his day. But there's something about the way Bach writes for the keyboard that to me is so similar to the way that Brahms writes for the keyboard. And I've been thinking lately that maybe part of the reason for that is that both men spent a lot of time conducting choirs, right? Brahms had his Frauenchor, his women's choir, and he had mixed choirs as well. And Bach was in front of the church group every Sunday leading the choir.
Right.
So they had this kind of direct, very personal connection to every single voice within a four-part harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And that translated when they wrote for the keyboard. I feel like every single voice in both of their writing is never neglected. You know, it's never kind of just, they never put a voice in and then just let it go. It always, it's as if it's a personal thing. It goes all the way to the end.
I noticed also in the pieces inspired by Brahms is Schoenberg's six easy pieces, which obviously has the six as well. Is that the connection there as well?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm glad that it's so visible. Yes, I mean, I could have chosen a number of different pieces by Schoenberg, actually, and Schoenberg was clearly inspired by Brahms in many ways. It's even in his writing, and he was, in fact, the first, at least in writing, to say that Brahms was a progressive and not just backward-looking. And I ended up choosing this piece precisely because it is a six-movement suite, and so here you have a much tighter, a much shorter suite of six movements that is supposed to have some kind of emotional arc. And again, I think it's Schoenberg taking Brahms's lesson. You know, Brahms teaches us so much. It's Schoenberg understanding what Brahms meant by taking the six-movement Baroque suite into the Romantic, and here he is taking it into the 20th century.
Right, that's quite a leap from Bach to Schoenberg.
And yet so similar in the way they approach, again, voice writing,
uh-huh.
or the sort of the strictness of where each line is supposed to go when, even though the affect, the immediate sort of sonic world that you're in is completely different.
Some of the other earlier pieces you selected, Bach was the earliest, but you also have some Schubert, his impromptu. So how did this, obviously a lot to choose from the composers just before Brahms or just at his time. How did you choose those?
Yeah, I had a bunch of different inspirations here myself about which pieces to use. I knew I wanted something by Schubert because Brahms admired his writing greatly. He admired his sort of style and his setting of mood, and especially the way that Schubert could make a lead, a song, out of anything, even a keyboard piece without a singer. I think these are qualities Brahms really emulated. And likewise, Schumann. Brahms obviously had a very close relationship with him, but he also, again, admired the way that he would use the keyboard as a stand-in for a number of different instruments. And the two pieces that I chose by Schubert and Schumann, I chose first, like everything else on this disc, because I love them.
Right. Well, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, that helps, right? and second, actually, I chose them for their weird and unusual key relationships.
Huh.
The last piece in Brahms's Opus 118 is in this very remote key of E flat minor, which is very rarely used in solo piano music. I mean, there are very few examples of it. And the Schubert impromptu I've chosen is in the relative major of that key, so the same number of flats. They're both in six flats. And mm-hmm. the Schumann Romance is in the sharp side of that same number of flats. So it's in F sharp instead of in G flat. You know, there's these little, I call them my nerdy connections. So my little nerdy connections of the pieces. But I think the fact that all three men explored these kinds of unusual and remote-sounding keys is part of who they were, and it's part of the kind of sound that all three were trying to create.
Hmm. And you also have a Chopin piece for the earlier pieces.
I do. You know, it's interesting. People tend to not associate Brahms and Chopin very much.
Yeah, I don't think that's an obvious connection for a lot of people. Obviously, Schumann is, but maybe not Chopin. How did you see that connection?
Well, I think part of the reason that we don't make that association is because they had a very different approach to where they put the emotion, right? Chopin is very much heart on sleeve, right? The emotion's right out there for us to see. And Brahms's emotion is often just, you know, it's just bubbling under the surface. It's not necessarily extroverted in that way. But Brahms greatly admired Chopin's writing and, in fact, was one of the editors of the complete Chopin edition. So he spent a great deal of time studying Chopin's music. And this particular piece, the Berceuse, I chose for two reasons. One is that it's a kind of lullaby piece.
Right.
And Brahms's Opus 117 pieces, which are on the set here as well, are also lullaby pieces in their way. And, of course, Brahms is famous for his lullaby, which I sing to my children every night. but the other reason is that I think there's an actual direct inspiration between the Berceuse and the romance from Brahms's Opus 118. The middle section of that romance has an unusual sort of compositional technique where the left hand repeats a tiny little arrangement of notes over and over and over again. And on top of that, the right hand does these beautiful ornamented variations. Well, that's exactly the compositional technique used by Chopin in the Berceuse. And there's even one particular variation where it's the same gesture in the right hand that Brahms uses that the Chopin had. And I actually think it's Brahms, you know, a tip of the hat to Chopin in what he does in that Opus 118. So it's just amazing to me to think, you know, here he was sitting at his, you know, writing desk, and this is what inspired him. This is how he decided to write these incredible things, which we now think of as having always existed.
Right, that they just came forth full-blown from his head.
Right, exactly.
Okay, I'd like to address, you also have the people who were inspired by Brahms. We mentioned Schoenberg, but there are three contemporary pieces on, two of which I believe you commissioned.
Yes, that's right. And I have to say, one of the easiest jobs of my life so far has been going up to composers and saying, I'd like you to be inspired by Brahms. Does that sound good? they seem to be chomping at the bit. So I have three 21st century works on this, all of which on the CD, they're all world premiere recordings. One by the Australian composer Brett Dean, one by the Israeli composer Avner Dorman, and one by the American composer Bruce Adolf. And one of the things I've been thrilled with is that all three composers chose very different aspects of Brahms to be inspired by and chose really different ways of communicating their music. I mean, very superficially, you know, Bruce Adolf wrote a single intermezzo. Avner Dorman wrote a set of three intermezzi titled After Brahms. And Brett Dean wrote a set of three pieces that are supposed to literally be intermixed or, you know, interspersed between the movements of Brahms's Opus 119. So they all took, you know, took very different forms in their pieces, and they all took a very different way of blending their own voice with Brahms's or of being inspired by him. You know, Bruce Adolf, to me, he was inspired very much by really specific details in Brahms's compositional technique, the way Brahms moves a line or a voice from one note to the next. Avner Dorman, in two of his three pieces, he's literally paraphrasing a particular Brahms intermezzo, but casting a totally 21st century light on it. And in his third one, he's taking, I think in many ways, the line from Bach through Brahms through Schoenberg and then again to his own music in the 21st century. And Brett Dean in his pieces has taken a very deep psychological view of Brahms. He writes that these pieces are, they're always aware of what's missing. He thinks of Brahms as, never having gotten Clara by his side fully. And always having something missing in his life, something that is there but not quite there. And he takes a lot of that kind of inspiration. He also takes inspiration from Brahms' youth in the kind of harbor bar that Brahms was forced to play in as a teenager.
He had a colorful early career.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, where he was performing at this bar as a teenager, where apparently the ladies of the night who worked there took him in and really raised him in certain ways as a young man, you know, to maturity. And however you want to read that.
And then he had obviously Clara Schumann and that relationship, which was intense but not necessarily fulfilled in some ways anyway. But so it's, Brett Dean thought that was Clara Schumann. Yeah, that's interesting to have Clara Schumann as part of the part that he's filling in. I did notice on the Brett Dean, and you mentioned that he intended these pieces to be interspersed with Brahms. Do you do that on the CD or?
What's nice about modern digital technologies? We had this discussion, my producer and I, back and forth. Well, how do we do this? Should we really intersperse them, or should we separate them and let people choose? On the CD, we've presented the pieces as Brett Dean would like them presented. So with his pieces really in between,
really interspersed.
And I've done this in recital as well. It's very effective. But of course, in the digital age, anybody can create their own playlist and listen to them however you feel.
Well, that is kind of interesting. And again, you went up from Schoenberg all the way to the 21st century. So you brought it through a number of centuries, 1800s to the 20th to the 20s. So,
I think it's so easy to lose sight of the fact that these great composers are people, and the minute we realize that connection, we see how they are links in a chain, and how the chain has continued, and it started, and it continues, and it will continue long beyond us. Right. And I think that's part of what makes music so exciting, and what makes it so powerful when it speaks to us.
I would tend to agree with that, and I was thinking of a number of rhapsodies on a theme by Paganini and things that composers have done this in the past and used earlier composers explicitly as inspiration.
And like I said, with this for example, the Chopin Berceuse, I think their Brahms was being explicit, and with Avner Dorman's first two intermezzi, he's being explicit. They're the same form as the Brahms intermezzi that they're based on. He even takes some of the same lines. He just puts other things in there that make it sound completely different and totally like the voice of Avner Dorman.
Well, I guess another question is, obviously, there's all these interconnections. How did you choose the order for the disc? I mean, things would tend to be over more than one piece of music and different people inspired by the same thing. So that must have been an interesting challenge as well, I would assume. Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, it was like a jigsaw puzzle. trying to fit the pieces in and who relates where. And, of course, I've also been taking this program around as a recital in various different guises. And how you would put it together for a recital is very different from how you would put it together for a disc. For example, in a recital, I could never begin with Opus 118 because the last piece of Opus 118 for me is so devastating emotionally that I need a 20-minute intermission to recover afterwards. So I always put it on the end of the first half, but it seemed like the correct opening move for the first CD because it's the Brahms side of a prelude, right? And since he based that, the trajectory of Opus 118 very much like a Baroque suite, that first movement acts like a prelude, and in that way it becomes the prelude to the entire disc. Which I like. And then we start the second CD with Avner Dorman's paraphrase of that very same intermezzo. So there's some links that way. And I liked the way certain pieces flowed into others. For example, I love the way that Schoenberg comes out of the Bach. There's something about the sound quality of the lightness of the keyboard writing of Bach and the very sparse linear writing of Schoenberg that links well together. And then I really like the way that Schoenberg's sound informs Brett Dean's sound so much in his pieces. So I've got the Schoenberg then going into the Opus 119 with the deans. There's so many little connections, and what I've been thrilled by as I get further and further into this project is I keep finding more. I keep finding more reasons why something is connected to something else.
Well, you'll just never stop on this. You'll just keep adding pieces. I guess I was answering, are you interested in any other composers in doing the same kind of approach? It seems to be a pretty intense project.
Absolutely. No, I feel that I learned so much from not only from immersing myself in late Brahms for such a long time. I mean, this was, it's a 2-CD set, takes a while to record. It was three separate sessions, and you know, sort of over the course of about a year and a half, and not only by seeing where he got his ideas from, and I think that changed my interpretation of his music, but even more so by then seeing the contemporary composers take on him. We can learn so much from an expert like Brett Dean or Bruce Adolf showing us what he sees in Brahms's music. And I think that also informed my playing of the Brahms as well as of everything else. And I can't wait to do another project like this with somebody else.
Well, I appreciate your time here. I know you have other things to do, but I wanted to let the audience know it's called Brahms Inspired, a new recording by pianist Orly Shaham on Canary Classics CC15. And it's available online and directly from canaryclassics.com. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us, Orly.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Okay. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.